Get started. Good morning, and thank you so much for joining us today. My name is Divya Ghatak. I'm going to be your MC for the session this morning. I'm also a board member of Watermark, and I'm the VP of People for Nevro. And I can tell you that, you know, getting to a new office is something that you need to get through, not only in your first job, but also navigating the different opportunities that come as a result of your first job and then your subsequent jobs. And, you know, couldn't be more pleased to, be there in this remarkable session. And we have an amazing hour in store for you. But first, let me introduce Amanda Slavin. Amanda Slavin is a millennial minded and Generation Z expert, as well as the CEO and founder of Catalyst Creative. Catalyst Creative is an experiential marketing firm that's focused on helping cities, brands, and institutions flourish by developing educational and inspirational experiences through strategy, as well as on and offline campaigns to increase engagement. Catalyst Creative is funded by Zappos CEO Tony Hsieh as part of the Downtown Project. Slavin and Catalyst Creative have worked with brands such as NPR, Dell, Coke, and Starwood Hotels. She's also most recently working on a book called The Feminine Workplace, which will transform workplaces to be more engaging and productive. Slavin was also listed on Forbes 30 Under 30 for marketing and advertising, BizBash Event Innovators, and Levo 100. Please put your hands together and welcome Amanda Slavin.
Thank you. It's always so interesting to hear your bio when you're sitting right next to it, next to the person. You don't know where to look or what to think. But thank you so much for having us all. What kind of just the lay of the land today. I'm going to be introducing the topic, telling you a little bit about why I was chosen as the thought leader for this panel. And then we're going to be doing a little bit of an unconventional introduction experience, which is a game that I would highly recommend each of you to do once you're in the hallway after this panel. And it's a 1 minute work story. So just a little bit of background about me. As mentioned, I'm the CEO and founder of a company called Catalyst Creative. I, before that, have a master's in education in curriculum and instruction, and I wrote my thesis on the 7 levels of engagement. I developed a methodology to actually measure engagement. And the reason why that's interesting, particularly when thinking about creating a reputation for yourself in a new office, is so often I think we think of ourselves as either disengaged or engaged. And we also think of our colleagues, our teammates, our customers as disengaged or engaged. But this methodology, and I actually just tweeted it, so if you actually want to look at the 7 levels of engagement, I don't have enough time to go through each level, but there really are these nuances between disengagement and unsystematic engagement and frustrated engagement and self-regulated interest, all these different levels to the highest level, which is literate thinking. And I applied that knowledge of education and inspiration into nightlife and hospitality in New York City, which was the complete opposite industry of education. The one thing I will say that was very similar is when bankers get drunk, they do act like first graders. So there was similarities in terms of our customer. But I ended up realizing within that workplace, I really lost a lot of who I was as a teacher. I lost my nurturing side, I lost my compassionate side, my empathetic side, really my feminine side. I ended up in a very male-dominated, masculine industry, and really kind of lost myself within the experience. And I ended up then leaving that industry only to start my company 5 years ago with the intention of applying my understanding of experiential marketing, applying my understanding of engagement into developing experiences that inspire and educate not only internal organizations, but external. And so within this panel, the real thing that I would love for everyone to get out is to really kind of see themselves as powerful, to see themselves as embodied, as their full selves within their workplaces, to go into a setting and feel confident and comfortable with what they want out of a workplace. We've all spoken about sometimes in panel conversations, I've been in a lot of audiences, I've curated a lot of panels, it seems like people are just talking to each other on stage and they forget that everyone here in this room is the reason why we are here. And we have all been very clear with each other on that. You know, this panel is for all of you and for takeaways, for you to leave here hopefully with more knowledge and more understanding of yourself so that you can be your best self wherever you are. And if you don't get that from this panel, feel free during the question and answer period to please ask whatever you need to know. This is a safe space, this is a brave space, so you know, get as vulnerable as you would like. So, what we're going to now do, which is somewhat of a challenge, especially in front of people, is the 1 minute work story experience. And I'm going to frame it, and again, highly recommend. I'm actually going to ask that you time me first. We literally only get 1 minute, and I will tell you when, and it will go off in terms of once I'm done. Okay, there's 1 minute. So as I mentioned, Amanda Slavin, I ended up starting as a camp counselor. That was my first job. Then I waitress. Then I was a cartoon voice for a nursery school cartoon. I worked at a phone-a-thon. I was a intern at Entertainment Tonight and at a PR firm in New York City. So I kind of bounced around to a lot of different industries. Ended up getting my master's in education. And while I was getting my master's, I ended up throwing events in New York City in my 20s to just make money on the side. Ended up falling into the industry of hospitality through a nightlife and restaurant group. Opened a series of restaurants, and again, as I mentioned, kind of felt a little bit sad inside because I lost that teacher perspective. Started to work with different nonprofit event series, TEDx, organize as much as I could on the side for free while I was at my actual company for hospitality. Met my business partner, Tony Shea, at a conference that I was producing. Started a company with him 5 years ago. Have been working with a plethora of brands that have already been mentioned, and that's how I got here. Did I do less than a minute?
Yeah.
There you go. Wow, 2 seconds. Woo! So I'm telling you, there you go. It's a really cool game, and it ends up really bringing out different things that you might not necessarily have mentioned, and I talk really fast and didn't breathe. So take a breath, and we're going to go next. I'm very excited. Dr. Amy, is that, can I call you that? Okay. So ready, and go.
Hi, I'm Amy Cooper Hakim. I'm an industrial organizational psychology practitioner and workplace expert. I help employees and employers get along better. I wrote a book called Working with Difficult People, and it's actually a revision and modernization of a book my grandmother wrote over 25 years ago. So it's a real special project to me, near and dear to my heart. And I, right out of school, started working with large box retailers and eventually opened my own company so that I could help various individuals in the retail industry. I also do various consulting and speaking engagements to help improve communication, reduce conflict in the workplace, and help people get what they want and need from various individuals, regardless of whether they are the boss, the subordinate, or the superior.
Whoa, 13 seconds. That's amazing. And sometimes when we do these introductions without a minute, you end up just not realizing how long you're going on for, but you could get it all in a minute. So again, please do this game after and let me know how it goes. Okay, next, Madonna, ready?
Hi, I'm Madonna Bolano, and I'm the head of HR at Applied Materials. I've been leading HR organizations for the last 25 years in high tech. And my story is when I was promoted to this role 4 years ago, I think I shocked our CEO, Gary, because when he offered me the role, I asked him a slew of questions. And they were questions that included things like, why did you pick me? How do you define success in this role? What's your plan B and what are you going to do if I don't take this role? And how are you going to take feedback that is unique or different from what you're hearing elsewhere or might be different from your own point of view? And my goal in that discussion, because it was a surprise to me that we were having this discussion, was to really get as much information as I could so that my family and I could make that decision. Needless to say, 4 years later, it's been a fun and engaging ride, and I'm glad that I was able to have that conversation with him, and certainly looking forward to the panel today.
6 seconds. Okay. You ready, Anna?
Yeah.
Dr. Anna, I'll call you.
I'm Anna Akbari. I'm a sociologist and the author of Startup Your Life, Hustle and Hack Your Way to Happiness. I got my start, I'll skip all of the stuff leading up to academia, but I got my start in academia and I taught at Parsons and NYU in New York City and cut my teeth in entrepreneurship during that time. Then moved to San Francisco and expanded on that, quit academia for a while. I now live in LA when I'm not traveling, and I'm an innovation consultant, and I coach individuals in a career life upgrade entrepreneurship capacity.
That was 21 seconds left. Wow, good job, everybody.
All about efficiency.
That was amazing. And these are the right people because they literally are communicating for a living and helping people tell their stories better. So very well done. Kudos. So the first question is for you, Madonna. You know, you've worked in HR for over 2 decades, since you were born. and when it comes to recruiting and building teams, it's kind of a two-part question. First off, what advice would you give someone who is starting a new job at a company? And then sometimes when starting a new job, you know, you could feel like you're not getting introduced to the right people, you're not getting invited into the right rooms. So, you know, what is your advice for this experience? So, you know, when you've actually started the job?
Sure. I'll answer the first question first, and I'll start with a foundation of what I call accountability. Meaning, although that company hired you and clearly has a vested interest to have you be successful as quickly as possible, I believe that we all own our development and we all own making sure that we're successful and we get acclimated quickly in that new role. So I think the foundation is really taking accountability ourselves for our success in the new role. And then I'll kind of put the other ideas in kind of 3 C's. One is celebrate. We often don't take the time to celebrate that we got this new job, that we bring game, that we bring something to the table. And I would make sure that we leverage that celebration, particularly when we face challenges and maybe we're questioning ourselves if we took the right role or if this is the right thing at that time, to recognize that we obviously have skills and capabilities that brought us to that. The second thing I would say is congregate. Find out in that new job, where are people congregating? This is outside the formal network. So are they getting together 10 minutes after a meeting ends? Are they having coffee in the morning? Is it bagel Mondays? Is it, you know, getting together on the weekend? So as you're building your formal network, take the opportunity to make sure you're thinking about your informal network as well in the company. And then the third thing I would say is to collaborate. And that's kind of 2 parts. One is to make sure that you're listening. So don't come in thinking that you've got all the great ideas. Take the opportunity to listen to what all the other folks have to share with you, but to also listen to their point of view and the ideas that they might have. And then the flip side of that is to give back. So give back your inputs, your ideas, question things. And so again, take accountability, make sure that you celebrate, congregate, and collaborate. On your latter question, just to quickly answer that, if you're not getting invited to the room in terms of certain meetings that you need to be in, or you're not getting certain information, first, I would say recognize that your manager and your colleagues are not, they don't have any negative intent. I'm sure they just overlooked it. And then go back to the accountability piece, which is figure out what meetings you need to be in, what reports you need to be receiving, what areas that you need to influence, and take accountability for that, take charge, and ask them to invite you to those meetings. Ask them to put you on that distribution list for that report. But that will only come if you take accountability to understand the company strategy, the department strategy, what objectives they have, and then how you feed into that. And then you'll easily be able to get yourself in that particular room or to get yourself in those particular situations where you can influence those objectives.
Awesome. The 3 C's. And I always say it's not rude here to be tweeting because, you know, essentially it's your classroom, like you're the teacher and all of your followers are the classroom to the world. So feel free to tweet whatever you know, nuggets of wisdom. I also, in terms of accountability and reliability and responsibility, would look at an interesting infrastructure called Holacracy. It's all around, instead of a hierarchy, it's self-organized company infrastructure. That's all based on the individual relying on their own self to move the organization forward. So just something to think about. Okay, Amy, so you were in a previous panel talking all around how to deal with difficult people, which I'm sure no one has dealt with in this room because it's just perfect at work and there's just no issues whatsoever. So we all want to get off on the right foot with our new boss or coworkers. But what if their first impression leaves us wondering if we can really get along with them? How would you advise handling a potentially difficult boss or coworker from day one?
So obviously we hope that we're going to walk in to an organization and we're going to love everyone we work with. But likely that's not going to happen. And it's really scary if that person is our boss. So we'll start with the boss and then we can go with coworker.
Yes.
Let's imagine that we have a boss who's ornery, or perhaps a boss who is always in our business. Maybe this is a micromanaging boss and one we don't particularly want to micromanage us. So the best thing to do is set boundaries. Imagine a box. Put yourself in that box. Not that we shouldn't be open to new ideas, but when we are having an initial time with a person and we're creating a relationship, we need to set the boundaries so that that relationship will then be moving forward in that manner. Boss, in order for me to be most productive, this is what I found has helped me in the past. There's my box. And again, when I say a box, people go, oh my gosh, no, we don't want a box, because we have to be open to ideas. Yes, this is a whole conference that's about opening our ideas and our minds and embracing and engaging in different ways and vantage points. I'm not saying that. But I am suggesting that we say, here is what I need to be productive, and every boss wants to have a productive employee. So if you say, boss, you know, here's what's worked with me in the past, here's what's worked for me when I worked in this environment, or if you're just right out of school, you know, just so this is, I want you to understand me and I need to better understand you. So when we manage our manager, sometimes people might be afraid to do so because they think that it's not their place, they're the subordinate. But actually, when you say to someone, this is what I need in order to be successful, the boss wants you to be successful, because when you are, then he or she looks good too. So they really, their ears perk up with that. So let's take the micromanaging example. So let's say that, you know, you're the kind of person, most of us don't want to be micromanaged. But when you're new to a job sometimes, or when a boss is new, he or she might jump on you so that because they are being held accountable ultimately for your work. So let's say that they continuously come to your desk, continuously ask you for updates on your projects, and you can't get them done because all you keep doing is stopping to give the update. Boss, thank you so much for stopping by. I mean, you can be nice about it, right? But boss, in order for me to be most productive, it would really help me if I could just give you a recap at the end of the day. Mm. Or if I could just touch base with you in every 3 hours, whatever it is, however you need to manage it. Or if it's such, you know, boss, I really think I have it from here. I promise you, if I have a question, I'll ask you. So then that type of negative approach or that negative relationship can sort of be pushed to the side because you're managing and creating the boundaries in the space. And if the boss is in your face too much, you can use similar type approaches. Mm. So let's take a colleague. Sometimes we deal with people and we see them, we're like, oh great, I have to deal with this person every day. I don't like him or her. The key thing to remember is we go to work not to socialize. We actually go to work. And we're able to embrace that. And we're able to say, you know, hey, this person doesn't have to be my best friend. They're just somebody I have to be friendly with. And I actually, instead of a friend, I like to dub friendlies. And you can put people in two categories. Friends are people who truly have your back. They're people who will always, no matter what, stand up for you. They're people who you can, I mean, I can count my true friends on my hand, or maybe two hands, but they're the kind of people in a work-life setting who would actually hurt themselves or their potential at a job in order to defend or support you. There are very, very few people who are truly friends in the workplace. You might have a couple, but if you think about friendlies, and friendly people are people you want to be professional with, people you want to be cordial to, people you want to hear about their day, people you want to perhaps grab a bite with, those people, if that person is just in a friendly category, then their obnoxious or uncomfortable behavior isn't going to be as offensive because you're able to take emotion out. You are emotionally invested in friendships and in true relationships where you love the individual, like family-based. But if you have a friendly relationship, then you're able to say, okay, I'm taking the emotion out of this, and I'm not going to focus so much on being hurt by whatever the obnoxious behavior is, but rather I'm going to manage it so I get what I want and need from that person.
Mm. Yeah, and I think too it's interesting because I like heard that from two different perspectives. I heard that from like my 20-year-old self going into a job and being terrified of my boss, and then I heard that over the past 5 years being a boss. And what I've really learned is I would love, when you were saying that, I'm like, I would love for my entire team to tell me how they work best. And that's actually the culture that we've designed, is I have said often, please manage me. Because if you don't manage me and if you don't tell me how you work, I might actually be completely communicating to you in the wrong way. And that's why things aren't getting done. And I think, too, the idea of asking questions and listening, just as you would in any other relationship, like with the friendlies, I love that. I think a lot of millennials, I don't know if there's millennials in here, and I am, I'm the tail end of a millennial. But millennials don't ever want to be millennials. They're like, oh, we're the tail end. I'm like, you're 23. But, you know, I think millennials really want a lot of friendship out of work. And so I like that idea of, you know, you don't have to be best friends with everyone. You can be friendly, you could be kind, but you're not going to be exactly the same because you're filling different holes. And so you just have to be able to work and collaborate together. So that's wonderful. So Anna, in your work, you advocate for embracing trial and error. Tell us some of the things you or your clients have tried when starting a new job or a project, and what was learned from those experiences.
Yeah, so in my work and in my book, I advocate for everyone, regardless of your age, career, position in life, to operate like an entrepreneur, even if you work for a large organization. And one of the key components of entrepreneurship is experimentation. Because you can't assume that something is going to operate or end up in a certain way. You don't necessarily have that track record. So the best you can hope for is to constantly experiment, gather data from that, apply that new knowledge, and then stage a new experiment. Mm-hmm. And so whether you are just starting, just out of curiosity, how many of you are just starting out in the workplace? Okay, so a decent number. And anyone in here considering a mid-career or early mid-career transition? Okay, so a good mix of the two. So you know, if you're just starting out, one of the things that I actually talk about this in my book, it's what I call the law school default. And you could apply this to any number of careers. A lot of individuals will pick a career or a graduate program because it seems like the safe choice. It seems like the thing that you're going to make X amount of money, and on that TV show, it kind of looks amazing, or you hear them all this morning talking about how fabulous it can be. And so why wouldn't I want to do that? And so people sign up for that without doing the necessary, and they go through years of schooling and invest a ton of money without necessarily doing their own personal experimentation around it. So you're left with a lot of people who maybe loved law school or loved the idea of it, but they absolutely hate their lives once they get into corporate law. There's actually, not to go too deep down the law school rabbit hole or to throw law under the bus, but there's actually an entire cottage industry around counseling lawyers into transitioning into other occupations. And this is true for any number of occupations. And maybe this fits you. So if you're just starting out and you're looking to perhaps go to law school, go to graduate school, whether it's for medicine, law, accounting, creative writing, whatever it is, or if you're contemplating a career transition, the best thing you can do is try to stage small experiments to get a sense of whether or not this is going to be a fit for you. And so what I always say is to follow a sort of formula that involves what is actually logistically possible for you, combined with where your talents are, what can you actually deliver on or acquire the skills necessary for, and where is there demand? Where would you fit into the marketplace? And so you want to find an intersection of all three of those. And if it's just one or two of those, you're going to have a hard time at it. And it will probably end up that one or two of them will be stronger, and that's okay. But if one is completely not even present in that formula, then it's probably best to explore something else, even if you're really passionate about that. So experimentation in areas that you can get small wins. And what I mean by small wins is getting feedback. So even if you feel like that experiment failed or gave you feedback that indicated that maybe that isn't right for you or something quote unquote negative happened, it's a win because you're able to extract information from it that you can then apply to either future experiments or future decisions.
There's a great platform. I love that, but first of all, it's bringing up so much for me. And there's a great platform called Catch a Fire. And Catch a Fire actually helps you identify nonprofit opportunities and volunteering opportunities that fit your skills. And so that's a really great feedback loop because nonprofits are really vying for people with talent. And sometimes when you're at a full-time job, it's very scary to identify opportunities where you can get feedback if it's not something that is a huge jump. And so a small win could be something like, hey, can I try to help you with your social media? Or can I try to help you with writing? Or can I try just to be able to also learn what you are really talented at and what you actually, you know, maybe have never actually done in your job, but you want to continue to build off of. So I loved that. And I think so often people think with entrepreneurship. It's about, you know, jumping ship, leaving your job, starting completely, you know, from scratch. And I took that similar path because I didn't have the freedom or flexibility to not make money, or I would, in my mind, would be like living on the street with no food. That's where my mind always goes. And so those little wins are so important because it also makes you feel psychologically safe enough to be able to take a risk in your life and then really do what you love. So I really love that.
If I could just add one quick thing, a good mantra for that is plan less, experiment more. Because too often we plan like we are corporations, and really we should be experimenting like we're startups. Mm.
I love that. So this is more kind of a general discussion, so please feel free to kind of have a conversation. You know, I'd love to have each person kind of talk about an obstacle that they overcame in a new office environment and really kind of think about whatever point of your career you want to discuss. It could be a recent job, it could be your first job, but what did it look like when you came in and you faced something, and what did you do to actually overcome that? If you want to start, this is really what you always talk about in terms of difficult situations, so I'd love your perspective first.
Okay, I have so many I could talk about. Now, thankfully, actually, in my particular work experience, I haven't had anything that was very negative that I had to overcome, and I'm really grateful for that. But there was something that I think some of you may be able to relate to that I experienced from a well-meaning individual when I was in the corporate environment. So I had a mentor, and I really wanted to decide if they wanted me to go on this career path and eventually go into executive leadership with this organization. And so the mentor was trying to rear me and give me guidance. And I wanted it because I felt that she could help me and she had such wisdom. And I mean, there were a couple of things that really stuck with me. And I mean, I think I'll share them, and I think they will help you as you overcome different obstacles. One time, I was huffing and puffing, very upset about something that happened, and I came to her, and I said, you know, I told her this story during our mentoring session, and she looked me square in the eye, and she said, Amy, we're all replaceable, even the CEO. And I was mortified, because I wanted her to, you know, to put her arm around me, or even virtually, you know, and say, you know, hey, Amy, oh, I totally get it. I've been there. And she really put me in my place. But I appreciated that. And I took that lesson from something that's negative, or also perhaps something that's positive. Let's say that we're doing really well at work, and we're feeling so super, I mean, great. But at the end of the day, even the CEO can be replaced in an organization. And so we need to spend our time working and be wise and mindful of our choices, but we also need to make sure that we spend time with those who for whom we are not replaceable, like family and loved ones. And so I think if we immerse ourselves too much, especially at the beginning of a career, or even if we're trying out a new venture and we have to put our whole self in, remember to take time for yourself, but also remember that we are all replaceable in the workplace, but not with those important relationships. So that's number one. The other thing that comes to mind is the same lovely mentor, who really is an awesome person, but she said some things in that direct way that I appreciate in hindsight, but didn't particularly appreciate then. She actually told me, you guys know me just this way, right? But I'm generally pretty bubbly and happy and fun with my friends, but in a professional setting, I say, pleasure. Nice to meet you. And I learned that from her. But she also suggested that I dye my hair brown. I was officially mortified because my whole life I've had this experience with the way that we look on the outside isn't always necessarily how we want to be portrayed. And when I was, if we step back a bit, when I was in high school, I was standing in a corridor helping parents who were coming in for a parent-teacher conference. And the members of student council and the cheerleaders were to come and help the parents to tell them where to go to different rooms. Cheerleaders were to come in uniform, and student council members were to come dressed nicely. I came dressed nicely, had my long blonde ponytail, and a parent came up to me and said, "Where's your uniform?" So here I had that issue, and I said, I am not a cheerleader. Not that there's anything wrong with being a cheerleader, but I was proud to be on student council. And then I have, you know, 10, 15 years later, this executive talking about my hair. Well, leave my hair alone and care more about me and who I am. So I did toyed with the idea. I remember talking to my family, talking to my husband, saying, should I dye my hair brown? Will I be taken more seriously? And it was a very important lesson, because despite the fact that someone might have more experience or might be well-intended, as this woman was, I had to realize that I have to own who I am and make sure that I'm presenting myself in a way that is most effective for me and for my goals for my career. And so I did take her advice in that I'm not, hey guys, how are you? You know, and I am a little bit more professional and with my body language or with my demeanor. But I'm proud of who I am and of the way that I look, and I don't think that someone needs to change that. So I think that when you're transitioning in a career or when you're first starting out, you want to please, but you also still have to remain true to who you are.
Absolutely. And Madonna, you know, thinking about that in terms of accountability and the individual, probably, by the way, your HR hat was like probably on fire, like she told you to dye her hair. So would love to know kind of a story that you have in the same regard.
So from a challenge perspective, you know, you're reminding me in terms of how people might perceive you from the outside. So having been in this industry over two decades, I was often kind of what I call a three-peater. I was often only the only woman in the room, the only person of color in the room, and the youngest in the room. Sometimes it'd be one of those three, and many times it was all three of those things. And I often would have other people who fit in one of those categories go, how do you do it? And, you know, how was it like? And I said, you know, I do it, but I don't think about it. I don't think about that I'm in that category or I'm the only one. I actually leverage it. Because I look different, I can state a different opinion. So I just frankly don't let it bother me. And I come from kind of a background where I was kind of always the underdog. I mean, I worked at my dad's gas station since I was 9 years old. That's not slave labor. I got tips for pumping gas. So I was used to it. I became a young mother and got married while I was at UC Berkeley. Took one semester off and then went right back in school and helped nonprofits with HR, raised my daughter, finished school, and started in the high-tech industry. So I've just been used to that, and I didn't let the fact that I was different bother me. So that was kind of one challenge that I've always faced in my career. The other is, because I started my family young and my husband and I chose to do that, and we have three kids, age 27, 22, and 16, so it's been fun, is the guilt that I often feel that women feel of when you're at work and you're not with your child. And so I found different ways to make sure that I could juggle that. You know, most recent example is my husband fought cancer last year, and I went to my CEO, and he kept telling me, when are you going to take time off? And I was like, oh, no, I got this. You know, I got somebody helping here, and I can do this, and I can do the job. And he would keep pushing me. When are you going to take time off? When are you going to take time off? And he said, you're going to remember this time. I need you to think about it. And one day, my husband was in a really bad situation, and we were in the hospital. And I called Gary, and I said, now's the time. And he was very supportive of that. And we were able to balance it. And I had a team of people, a great team at Applied, that helped me in terms from an HR perspective. And we continued the business and we moved on. And there's probably thousands of people at Applied that didn't even know that I had to take some time off to take care of my husband. But you have to make those calls. Earlier in my career, my eldest daughter was a senior in high school and I had not spent any time, elongated time with her because I had been working throughout her whole life. And so she was a senior in high school, and I decided to quit my job. And I said, I'm just going to take the year off and spend senior year with her. It was a big issue in the company that I was at. And I said, nope, I don't want to take a leave. I don't want to work part-time. I don't want to consult. I'm just going to go be a full-time mom. And when I'm ready to come back, we can engage in a discussion. And I found a different opportunity at that time. But it was really making sure and be cognizant, to your point earlier, You can be replaced where you're at in your job, but your family will not be able to replace you. Yeah. So it's making sure that as you are pursuing your objectives at your work and doing a phenomenal job for the company that you're at, just make sure that you've got some other priorities as well.
That's beautiful. And I think, you know, before, Anna, when you were talking about a startup mentality, sometimes I feel like large corporations are more like
cruise ships, and startups are like steamboats where they can make these decisions at a much quicker rate. And it's interesting, you said sometimes we treat ourselves like corporations. And in these two instances, you know, you both kind of treated yourself like a startup. You're like, this is what I need to do right now, and I'm going to, you know, take a small kind of bet and get feedback and then move forward. So I'd love to know your perspective of this as well, but I just wanted to kind of tie them all together because I thought that was really beautiful.
Well, yeah, and to that point, we are whole humans, even at work, and the managers and the organizations that recognize and facilitate that, like Tony Hsieh and his company, they flourish. I mean, studies show that allowing people to be people fully, humanly, actually helps, not hurts, the bottom line. Yes. So in my capacity as an innovation consultant, we often, my business partner and I often speak to organizations that have a lot of what we call innovation blockers. And that might be a policy. It might be something structural. It could be humans. I'm sure most of you can think of some human innovation blockers on your teams or from projects that you've worked on. It might even be your own mindset that is an innovation blocker. So one of the key things that you can do is identify what are the innovation blockers that will be working against you, or at least creating some hurdles and challenges for you in whatever it is you're trying to achieve, a product, a project, a new initiative, a new course of life. And one of the things, I'm a big advocate for conscious rule breaking. And one of the phrases that I like to use in a lot of different capacities is distinguished compliance. And what that means essentially is that in whatever capacity you're operating, you find a way to comply, to demonstrate that you belong, that you get the rules, that you're not clueless. But then you also find a way to subtly break or invert or stretch the rules in such a way that you can distinguish yourself. And again, this goes back to those small wins and experimentation. Look for whatever the lowest hanging fruit is and find how you can sort of demonstrate that maybe operating under the radar in an unconventional way can clear the way for you to have, oops, can have the space to break or redefine the rules later on. So distinguished compliance and recognizing innovation blockers.
Yes, that's a very nuanced mentality, is distinguished compliance, because I think when we first start jobs, we're like, we'll do, okay, yes, we'll do whatever, and just like you said before, and being able to say like, yes, and, this is, you know, in comedy and improv, it's this line around yes and. You have to build off of the other person's story, and so it's, you're not actually stopping them short. And I think sometimes in new jobs, we say yes, and we really freeze up, and we don't think about ourselves in that yes. And so if you're thinking yes and, how can I actually leverage this rule for my own growth? Again, going back to that idea of accountability, you can grow as well as the company. So I think that's really wonderful advice.
And because it can't be one or the other. If you're all compliance and if you're all rebellion, it will not work. You must have a combination of the two. And of course, you have to be astute enough to be able to read when you need a little more and a little less of one. But it's always a fine line walking between the two of those.
Awesome. Okay, so what's one piece of advice you would offer to those starting out in their career, or possibly, again, maybe having a mid-career transition that often isn't taught in college? Why don't we actually start with you, Anna, because you taught in college.
Yes.
So something that you did not teach in college that you wished maybe you were allowed to, or you thought that, you know, now it's something that you could go back and teach, like something that you're possibly thinking in terms of advice.
Oh, my gosh, I have so much stuff to say right now. Well... Okay, quick rundown. First, obviously, after you graduate, no one cares what your grades are, and you don't get credit just for showing up. That's something that I think a lot seems so self-evident and obvious after you've been out of school, but that a lot of students don't really realize. Another is, and you guys were touching on this a little bit earlier, that you're replaceable, is complacency. Never be complacent. You can and will be replaced, and just because you work for a large organization and maybe don't go the entrepreneurship route is not job security. And so you always have to be hustling. I think that lighting that fire and hustling is really important. I also think that too many students or people just starting in their careers, and this also applies to people that are transitioning, they underestimate what they're qualified to do. Because it isn't just about what shows on your resume, it's how you tell your story and the narrative that you piece together about your path, no matter how winding or circuitous it may seem. Because really, you need to be able to write, to speak, to think, to problem solve. If you can do those things, you're going to be highly employable in the majority of careers. Now, you may need some specialized training for something that you're looking to do, but those are the main skill sets. The rest you can usually pick up along the way as you go. And if your path is rather winding, as mine is and was, never make apologies for that. Always find a way to talk about that experience as teaching you something and being an asset to whatever it is you're looking to do next.
Great. Madonna?
Just two things. We come out of school thinking we should know all the answers. So I would just say ask questions and keep learning.
Absolutely.
So I was also going to say ask questions, but specifically ask for help when you need it. So when you're going into a job, sometimes you want to pretend like you know something because you don't want them to think that you don't. So it's okay to say, I want to make sure I understand this. Is there a resource I might review? Is there someone who I could tag along with and watch so I do it right? Just to make sure I understand you're asking me to do this. Mm. So I think sometimes people clam up and are afraid to do so. So definitely ask for help when you need it. I think that it's very important to live with gratitude. Mm. And we are always going to see that things are better or worse than what we have than someone else. And instead of focusing that way, if you can frame it in some way to be grateful every day, I coach my clients to try to write down in a journal. It could be three things you're grateful for. It could be one thing you're grateful for. One thing that seems to work well is to try to consider something that you've done for yourself to improve yourself spiritually, emotionally, physically, and intellectually. Mm. Every day. If you have had a phone call and you were walking while you were talking, then you could knock off the physical component and the emotional component. If you were sitting in a panel like this, then you're having the intellectual component covered. So if you're able to take care of yourself that way, then you end up living with a more grateful mind, and then you're able to give to the organization.
Be a full person. Show up as your full self wherever you are, whether it be with your family or your work, and don't be afraid to be able to show who you actually are within your workplace, on a stage, or in a hallway. So would you like to move to questions?
Absolutely. I really want to thank our amazing panel today for all the insights and expertise that they shared today. Before we move on to questions, you know, I just had a question of my own, and we spoke so much about, you know, personal growth and, you know, sharing our whole person. I think that piece is so so relevant, right? Because we grow so much as we move through our personal journeys and our professional journeys. And, you know, almost, you know, if you're in one particular phase, you're almost preparing yourself for the next phase when you don't really know it. And I think that is most fascinating, to just sort of throw yourself open to new challenges, because that is what will prepare you for your next role. Mm-hmm. So would just, you know, love to ask the panel about, you know, your particular insights or experiences with that, because you've certainly talked so much about personal growth, but I think that is a big component of that as well. So any insights there?
New role, is that
kind of progress in terms of, I can start if you'd like.
Yeah, sure.
Why not? I'm gonna do it in 1 minute. No, I'm just kidding. So I think sometimes I'll say it from a startup founder perspective, because the highs are so high and the lows are so low, because it's so much of my identity is my company. And the way that I've really looked at it is, I found that founders of organizations so often build a company that they need, and then I find that it's the job of the founder to do as much work on themselves, if more work on themselves in their business, so that they don't get in the way of the organization fulfilling a need for way more people. And so I think that progress in terms of, you know, step-by-step approach and not being so hard on yourself, and also, you know, someone once gave me this advice
He's the executive producer of Batman. Pretty cool guy. And he said, don't necessarily accept compliments, because the people telling you the best compliments might be the people telling you the biggest insults the next day, and then you have to accept the insults. And it was really different perspective than I was used to. But what it really taught me was that I have to be firm within myself, and I have to know myself well enough to know that the lows don't define me and the highs don't define me, and that I'm going to be resilient no matter what comes my way, and just take it from a step-by-step perspective, and do the best that I can within that moment. So I would say that's professional and personal, recognizing that it's just kind of like know thyself, do the work harder on yourself than your business, than your job, and even than the relationships that are most important to you.
I was actually going to go with resilience, because my dad always told me that we can learn to fail or fail to learn. And we have to remember that any situation, positive or negative, it's like a boomerang, right? You have to bounce back, pull that rubber band and say, okay, I'm going to have this situation again. What can I learn from it? What can I do again that's great? And what maybe should I change because it didn't work well? And I think people beat themselves up in this age of entitlement, and in this period of time where we all are striving for perfection. Perfection doesn't exist in humanity. We can strive for excellence and be really happy when we do something and we're excellent. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that changing that mindset can really help to embrace those failures and recognize that you have a lot of mistakes before you get to that awesome final end. And the final end may not be the final end. It might just be that stepping stone.
Yeah, I would just add that we're not alone. So, you know, other people have probably made a similar mistake in the past. Someone's going to make it in the future. There's resources out there, and we tend to forget. We tend to think we're the only ones facing a certain situation, and we're afraid to ask for help, to your earlier point. So I would just keep remembering that we're not alone out there.
Yeah.
Thank you. I would like to now open it up to questions. So.
You guys can line up, actually, if you want, at the microphones.
I think it's on. Thank you so much for putting together this topic and just being yourselves and offering your experience. It's been helpful. Recently, I've started a new role, but not at a new company. So I've been a total master in my old role, got to the top of the top, and then decided to change job ladders. And now I'm starting this new role. So do you have some tips about that? Because now it's sort of a different situation where, yes, I'm in a new job, so I have to, I guess it's more about giving myself permission to start from the beginning, but also facing rebranding, but I also know the people and still work with them. So tips about that.
So first I would say, I hope that you've let go of your other responsibilities.
Oh, yeah, they're gone.
Okay. Because sometimes people try to do multiple roles and that's not good for anybody. The second thing I would say is, remember, back to the celebrate, remember that you're there for a reason. So clearly you have credibility in the organization. Clearly they thought you have capabilities even though it's a completely different role. And clearly you will be able to leverage your own network and knowledge in the company to get stuff done and to ask questions. No one really will hold anything against you because you ask a question in a certain area. For me, it's more of keeping your own confidence. To be able to get to that point where you're hitting it on all cylinders and doing just as well as you were doing in your other role. Because now you have that past experience that you can leverage, and especially the network in the company to be able to leverage.
Is this a role that is just singular? There's one of you, or are there other people who do this job as well?
The new role or the old role?
The new role.
The new role, there's actually two others, and we're also a new team.
Okay, so it's ideal. It's a new from scratch role, or it's something that there have been people who have been in that position in the past?
It's a totally new team.
Okay.
It's a program manager role, so that role is something that has existed in the past, but the things that we're program managing is different. So,
got it. So one thing that you can do is go to someone in the organization who has been in a program manager role, even if it's not within that same silo, and ask for a realistic job preview. Ask them, hey, realistically, what can I expect to do? Not what are my job duties or my general paragraph, right, that we have about the job responsibilities for that new role, but what can I do? I walk into the office. Run me through it. Give me a realistic job preview. You know, from 8 a.m. or 8:30, whenever you start, until 5. What am I doing? And that can help you so that you know which resources you need to to utilize, whether they be people or things, to get your job done more effectively. And you can learn from those experiences.
Great. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Neha. I work at Applied Materials. And my question for the panel is, there are some early stages of your career where either you can follow your manager's instructions to get the project done in like less time or to make it more easier, or you can work on your skills or your trainings and then improve your knowledge about that project. So did you have this kind of conflict in your when you started your career, or what is your suggestion for this kind of challenge?
Well, I can talk to her every day.
I'm happy there.
No, no, that doesn't apply to me.
So and also, I would like to add, since it is important for like interns, and I'm an intern, so for them it is very important. Either they want to get both of the things done, they want to have a project done in their less time, and they also want to work on their skills. So what should be priority for them?
The key thing to do is to prioritize your tasks. If you have the ability to use that as a learning opportunity and you don't want to be handed the information, then that's fine. However, in general, you should be doing that on your own time and being productive at work. So if somebody has already laid out a way that to do a particular task effectively, you can use that. Now, while you're doing it, you might say, hey, I think we might benefit by changing this a little bit. But first, you've got to get the task done, do it well, and then let's say you have to repeat that task, then you approach your boss and you say, I'd like to, instead of going this way, perhaps try this way instead. If we don't get what we need, then I can go back to what you said, but are you okay with me trying that out? And so doing so would then give you a chance to venture within the workday space, but ideally you should be learning and growing and enhancing outside of the workplace. If you don't want to take time outside of office hours, then ask your boss to allow you to have some time, some professional development time, to come to conferences, to learn about something, but do so not when you're going to impact a project that has a deadline.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, thank
the
you
only
so much.
Thing I would add is be a rock star in what you were asked to do. So you need to be able to prove your capability. If your manager's asked you to do, you know, project A, do it really well, because the next time it comes around, there's another opportunity to do a different project or a new project, or for you to have established your credibility that you can then bring kind of this different or new idea, and he'll go, oh, well, it seemed to work last time, so you know maybe I should listen to her this time. But make sure that you're absolutely succeeding well in what your manager is asking you to do so that you can spend that other time in the development areas.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Nivi Kumar. I'm a senior product manager. Thanks for the wonderful panel discussion. I had quite a few takeaways for myself. My question's around communication strategies in large meetings where you're representing your team or the area that you're working on. And oftentimes I've found myself in a situation where the issue or the points that I've raised don't necessarily get the same kind of reaction from other folks in the room, but when the same thing pretty much maybe in different words or in a different way is communicated by someone else, maybe senior than me, or maybe sometimes it's a male, I find that it's gotten different responses. So I'm very curious about what strategies you would suggest in such situations so that we can get the same kind of response out of that.
That's a loaded one because it's just so true. Do you want to say something?
You have to know your audience.
Yeah, I can add something as well.
You've got to know your audience. So I worked for a number of years at a retailer. And here I had my doctorate and I thought I was so cool, right? Different story than that mentor. But I literally went in and I thought that they were going to care about what I knew and all the theories I had learned and the years I spent at school. But they really cared, because it was a retailer, about my experience selling kitchen knives in college. Best knives, right? And so I instead of sitting down and trying to come up with some theory to explain and have them listen and ooh and ah, quickly got over that and realized that the way to get to those people was to talk about knives. So I applied the theories and talked about selling knives because they were a retailer and I was then able to relate. So I would say figure out how you can better relate. Don't worry about the gender issue or, you know, it's not that. It's you've got to spark an interest and be engaging enough and have them go, hey, what's in it for me to listen? We all ascribe to the what's in it for me philosophy. We may not agree or want to say it out loud, but regardless, every situation or instance that we have, we say, you know what, hey, I'm going to do this because it's going to benefit me here, or I'm not going to do this because even though there's a consequence, I don't mind the consequence. So as an adult, I want to listen. And how am I going to listen? I'm going to listen because it's going to help me in some way. And that's going to, so think of knives.
And I would say to that as well, ask a lot of questions in the room. And so as you kind of, because in order to be able to find out that they're even interested in knives, sometimes you have to ask all of the questions that lead up to that moment. And so ask questions. And the other thing that I would say is after you leave the room, recap your idea and your concept and send it around, or even put some more work into doing a presentation and saying, remember, this is the idea, and have it in writing and have it at a date, because I've had many of a jobs where I've brought something up and then months go by and someone gets a promotion or raise and I'm like, but I came up with that idea. And they're like, no, you didn't. So I think having things in writing is really, and also again, this idea of collaboration. So there was a great article of women within the Obama administration. They all started to repeat what the other woman said in the room. And so actually creating collaborative opportunities with other people within the room, men and women, and saying, hey, that was a great idea. I have that idea too. Can we work on that together? Or how can we, you know, support each other within this, as opposed to, you know, that was my idea, I have to protect it. Really just be able to ask questions, share your concepts through writing, and be collaborative.
And I'll add two more quick takeaways. I've often found as I watch women versus men present that women will say things like, I think, or I believe we should pursue this, or I kind of like this idea. And men are often better at saying, this is the solution that we need to employ to solve that problem. Mm-hmm. It's very different, because as an audience, the woman might be sounding to me like she's not quite sure, she kind of likes the idea, whereas the man is stating it as a fact. So that's one quick thing. The other quick thing that I would say is if you find that you're in the meeting room and someone is leveraging off your idea, or you know, restating your idea, you could say, thanks, John, I appreciate you expanding upon my idea. I think the, and then continue the rest of what you're saying. So it kind of goes back to you.
Got it.
So something to think about.
And you have to be seen before you can be heard. So be your own sociologist in that space. You can't change, you're not going to likely change your gender or race. And so the everything else is fair game. Analyze what everyone else in that room is doing that's different, that's getting someone to listen to them. That's your entry point. Comply to that mode of speaking or self-presentation or a general presentation style, language that they're using, whatever that is. That's your entry point. And then later you can fill them in on how amazing you are and all your other ideas. But you need to be fully seen by them before they're going to listen to you. As a complete employee.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Good morning, ladies. Earlene Rutledge from Applied Materials. Thank you very much for your insight and your advice today. We really appreciate it. I'm an experienced individual, and I've done this many times successfully, I think, over the years. But my question is still, from your perspectives, how do you establish a relationship with a new manager, a positive, productive one from the outset? Because I'm going through that again.
Okay. I can start. I can also give early feedback every day.
We talked a lot about some of those great tactics, the same way, just in reverse, right? So instead of saying, as an employee, in order for me to be most productive, I need, as a new manager, you can say, I recognize that we all operate differently. How can I best help you to be successful? What do you need from me in order to be productive? And when you do that, then the employee feels valued, and then you are also truly able to hold yourself accountable to move that person forward. Because your job as a manager, the best managers are able to put their feet on the desk and watch everyone working so well, like a well-oiled machine. Everyone is empowered to take those tasks and make something happen. So you have to take yourself and put the ownership on you to actually do that.
I think, Amy, you were asking from the perspective of when you get a new manager.
Yeah, when you
right?
get a new
oh,
manager.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes. But I would just turn that around, yeah. Right? Okay. It's like asking your manager, you know, what are your objectives and how can I help you succeed in that? Okay. What can I do to help make you more successful? Right. So there's that direct conversation, but there's also the observation, because Earlene, you've worked well with many different people, and you're good at observing people and seeing kind of what makes them tick, You know, what objectives are they focused on? What are the things that they're, when they're focused on something, how do they behave? And so you can interject that and say, hey, I observe that whatever. During 12 to 2, you like to eat lunch as well as work on your email, and so I'm going to help you do that. You know, what can I do during that time? You know, can I make sure that I'm addressing some projects for you when you're when you're using in your focus time? So I would ask direct questions to ascertain that, and then I also leverage your observations, and you can test those observations, right? Hey, I noticed that, you know, after like 4 o'clock, you know, things were piled up, and we're not able to complete everything because we've fallen behind on all of these different things. You know, what can we do to approach that? I have some ideas.
I think also while you may all be working toward a common goal, you don't all accomplish that in the same way. And helping managers, whether you're the manager realizing this or helping managers to understand that people work differently. And it really doesn't behoove anyone to try and make everyone conform in a single way. So if you have a different working style than your manager, for instance, I think it's really helpful for you to explicitly state that, and then of course over-deliver when you do it your sort of alternative way. But sometimes it can't be left for them to just observe that. I think it's really important to state, this is how I work, this is how I work best, I want to perform optimally, so if you'll give me the opportunity to work in this way, I think I can best deliver.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for the question.
Thank you. We're going to hold that question for just one moment because two of our panelists have a book signing that they need to get to, but the other two panelists will stay back and answer your question. So, and I also wanted to just announce it to all of you that Dr. Anna Akbari would be signing her book on Startup Your Life, and Dr. Amy Cooper would be signing her book on Working with Difficult People. So please go ahead and join them for that.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.